Okay, let's have a barbecue now. Okay, time for barbecue. Thank you, Chaim. Some of you understood my line, some of you didn't understand my line. AJ understood my line. Time to do Ketzat Tolin. That's what I meant. Time for barbecue. What's that? There should be plenty of them floating around. Oh, so Chaim, can you grab those things and send one down to Yehuda? And then we'll... Who else is missing? Who needs...
Pen behind you.
Oh, it never made it over to that table. There you go. Or almost never made it to that table.
Is it just me?
No, okay, I think so. Yeah. Galat Express doesn't sell unsalted meat. Michael Kastner would get in a lot of trouble if he was selling it. Except for liver. What?
When Chaim and I get our Kabbalah, we'll have a barbecue.
You're doing Behemoth too?
No.
Yeah.
We're working our way up.
I guess it's only going to be barbecue. It's only going to be barbecue chicken, huh? I don't know how much our neighbors will like it, but all the squawking chickens.
It won't be squawking for long.
Okay. Anyway, it's not enough to know how to shechtit, guys. You gotta know how to do the rest, too.
Yeah, I realize.
Okay, they'll be standing there plucking feathers.
At least it has a down recent daughter. Traditionally in Europe, they used to save the goose feathers, like they'll make a blanket and give it as a dowry.
Okay.
We'll give the heads to your son.
Kate's on. Okay, okay.
We'll give the heads to your kids.
Okay, who would like to read the Gemara Psachim? It's going to take us a couple of days to get through this. There aren't enormous numbers of complications, but we have to go through the Gemara. The Gemara is going to serve as a nice segue to the Sugyan of Avodah Zarah because the issue of Recha Milsa as well. And that happens to be one of the most... It's very much Nogei Lamaisa of Recha Milsa. Why is it very much Nogei Lamaisa? Because of your oven. What do you do with your oven? Okay. I don't think this was a shaila until people became fairly wealthy recently. And they spoke about having... Not that you couldn't cover things theoretically, but I think it's a recent vintage. Okay. The milk and fleishik ovens. Yeah. So your grandmother didn't have a separate milk and fleishik oven. Okay. Anyway, let's start with the Mishnah. Can I get a volunteer? Someone who hasn't been reading. Who would like to read? Okay, Jason, you can start. We're going to split this up. Well, no. If I want someone who saw the Mishnah. I'm not upset, but I'd like to see someone who actually saw some of this. Oh, I realize this really is this belongs to you. That you really, this really fits the Karban Pesach here. Okay, fine. Yeah, did you ever use that term specifically, the Karban Pesach? And, yeah, well, that's not exact, Paschal. Okay, fine. All right. Did anybody get through the Gemara or get through chunk of the Gemara?
I saw the Mishnah, but not today.
Okay, well, nobody got to the Gemara. Was everybody so busy with the Ramban? All right, so you know what?
Forget the Rashba. What about the Rashba? Yeah.
Skipped him.
No, but I don't think the Rashba, after our discussion, there's any more so much added. If he helped clarify at certain points. So, Ari, why don't you read? Let him.
Start the Mishnah.
So what happens here? Touches the side of the oven, right? So obviously it's a Tanur Shalcheres. The one basic presupposition, which is really discussed initially first in the first Mishnah, is Ketzad Tolin. How do you roast the Pesach? The reason why roasting a Pesach is a halacha question, not a culinary question, is because the din is that a Pesach has to be tzliyesh. The Karban Pesach is the only Karban that has restrictions on how it is eaten from a culinary perspective. Every other Karban that is eaten, the Mishnah uses two words to describe how you eat it. And what is that? What are those two words? Does anybody here ever say karbanos? Why does anybody here say karbanos more than once in a blue moon? So you should, at least so you should know, because otherwise some of you will never open up a Maseches Zvachim. Okay, so there are, believe it or not, I know if you learn in yeshiva, in most cases, you might know that there's such a thing as Seder Nashim and Seder Nezikin, and maybe Seder Moed. If you learn to maybe Brachos, you know that there's a Maseches Chulin, but there are lots of other Masechtas too, some which even have a Talmud Bavli or a Talmud Yerushalmi on them, which are Kedai, when you have the chance to learn Mishnayos, because Mishnayos are a good thing. If you were to learn, even if you were to never open up a Maseches Zvachim, if you recite to the Karbanos, you would say Ezu Makoman. And there you see the magical two words, Avigal. Bechol Ma'achol. Bechol Ma'achol. The Kohanim can eat the meat any way they like to eat it. They want to put mustard on it, they can put mustard on it. If they like to eat it, I think umtza, which means raw, I believe that might be mutter also. If they want to have a pot roast out of it, they better cook it quickly, but nonetheless they may do so. If they want to have a barbecue with it, that's mutter also. The Karban Pesach is the only karban which is eaten, which has a restriction on how it's eaten. It's Gzeres HaKasav, which says, Al tochlu mimenu na uvashel mivushal bamayim ki im tzliyesh rosho al kraav v'al kirbo. And even though you might have become confused because the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh says uvishalta v'yachalta, so ba'akasav ashlishi v'achria beinehem v'yivashlu es apesach ba'ish. Okay, you're taking different hayamim with me, you haven't gotten there yet, but you will. Or hopefully you've gotten there on your own in your Bikias, but we haven't gotten there in class yet. But that's a very famous example of intra-biblical interpretation. And so the din is, Pesach must be Tzli'esh. If it's not Tzli'esh, if it's eaten any other way, if it's prepared any other way, it's possible. At least the meat may not be eaten as such. So the Mishnah says, if the Pesach touches the Charsu Shel Tanur, You have to peel away that part of the Pesach that came in contact with the wall. Why? Because that part of Pesach is not Tzli'esh, it's Tzli'cheres, it's Tzli'tanur. You know? What do you do about... How did they roast the Pesach? What about the spit?
You can't, because it's metal.
Ah, so they say you can't use a metal spit. Because metal, it's true, physically... Cham miktzaso cham kulo. This is the one case where it clearly is physically true and halachically is applicable. This is an issue in regular Yeridah as well about whether you say cham miktzaso cham kulo by metal in terms of blios. But in terms of actually roasting the Pesach, the assumption is you're not allowed to use a metal spit because the metal will heat up, get really hot, not from the Pesach itself, even before the Pesach gets hot internally, and it will end up cooking. It will end up cooking the inner part of the Pesach somewhat, the heat of the metal. And therefore, they used a spit that was made out of wood. No, it's not going to burn because the wood's not directly... You're not putting the wood in the fire, and there's enough juices flowing there, and if the wood itself is moist to start with, so you're not going to have a problem. But yes, obviously, choose wisely. If you chose tinderbox wood spit, your carbon Pesach would be quite well roasted because it would fall into the fire. Okay? So fine. So that's the first part of the Mishnah. Go ahead.
It would be a carbon ola, right?
Something close to that. You'd have, you know, you can imagine the wood burning inside eventually. The lamb bursts into flames. Okay, go ahead. Nugget, so that's the first point. Yikov es makoma. So notice what's required here. What's that? Okay, so what's required here apparently it doesn't asser the entire Pesach. The hot cheres next to that piece only assers a small part because that's the part that it cooked. If by accident the Karban Pesach, which is, let's say, on this lamb on the spit, comes in contact with the wall of the oven.
So it's in an oven.
It's in an oven. The way they cooked it typically.
So it's not
fair,
right? So
what's
it's
that?
Cooked on the oven even if it doesn't touch the
fire. You could say the stone of the hearth.
No, but there's a flame. No. You have to understand that the flame, the way their ovens were constructed. I'm sorry for not saying this. I take this as
the
Rav Pashut.
Flame under the oven.
No. The Talmudic oven was imagine something shaped like a barrel, you know, where it's narrow at the bottom, widens and narrows at the top. The fire was placed on the floor of the oven. The Pesach, when you lower it, is directly in contact with the flame.
But the flame
The flame may be contained by the oven. That's not considered being...
Okay, that's what our oven is.
What's that?
Contained in a box.
So the truth is that our oven, to the extent, except for that, this is real. Most of our ovens, there's a separation between. In other words, it's not directly in contact with the flame. The flame, unless you use the broiler, the flame is buried underneath. There are little holes, but basically, what really is creating it's more convection of the metal than the flame itself. Here, the flame, the heat is direct from the flame to the thing. So yes, there is.
For them to say that it's not being cooked by an oven, and then when it's cooked,
No. Because think about it. Firstly, air always has to be considered. You know, you can't argue from the air alone. You can't argue from the fact that this air in the oven doesn't mean anything, because whenever you cook it, if you cook it on open fire with no oven, it's still, you don't cook it and you don't put it in the fire. There's always a barrier of air. So you don't say that's called tzli avir, not tzli esh.
But my point is that the air...
So all the oven is doing is really keeping the air inside. It's not as if the source of radiant heat that warms the Pesach is the fire.
And being kept in by the oven.
may enhance it, but it's not the same thing as putting the fire on the outside of the oven, and then the radiant heat is that of the oven.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Don't you have to serve it whole?
No, you have to roast it whole.
But it's not yet roasted.
You take the gedi. You don't stuff an apple in its mouth, but you do. you stick the kra'av and kra'av rosho al kra'av al kirbo, you know, which are stuck somehow tied. It's called the gedima kulas. So basically, the rest of the body is whole. You have those three parts. I forget. I think they're roasted separately, but next to it, because inside might be bishul on them, and then you put it on top of the fire.
But if you cut a piece of it off because it touched the side, then you're no longer cooking it whole because it was cooked by something.
So firstly, you may, if that in fact is the requirement, if we lost a piece, it doesn't mean you can't cook it. That's l'chatchila. If you cut up the Pesach, I don't know if there are Mishnayos to deal with this, you still probably can roast it. It's not l'chatchila. So here...
And you get the schar for achilas.
Well, yeah. Well, the truth is the schar achilas Pesach is achieved from the... You yotzei your carbon when you shecht it, and at the time you shecht it, you could theoretically eat it. At that point, your yotze, no matter what happens to the Pesach, whether you eat it or don't eat it, as long as when you shecht it, you could at that point be roy to roast it and eat it, and then your yotze the chiyuv, no matter what happens to the Pesach. Okay?
So let's say if you drop dead at that point, then like you still get schar for achilas karban Pesach?
No, you get schar for havas karban Pesach. Okay. So anyway, now, second case. Go ahead. This is what gets more interesting. What happens here? Splatters, right? So it drips onto the cheres, splatters off it, and then splatters back onto the Pesach itself. Okay, so what's the din?
And this rotate, I mean, this is just the, kind of the fats of the... I mean, it's not like actual sauce you put on it.
No, because you don't use sauce on the karban Pesach. Right. Why not? Because that would be considered bashal mavushal b'mayim, and not only mayim but shar mashkim as well. Now, there is a din. I think sacho later in the Mishnah is not when you're cooking it. I think it's when you do it later. In other words, Tosis points out on Ayin Vav and Aleph, once you have properly fully roasted the Pesach, you can't aser it afterwards. In other words, if you do something to it afterwards, that's not an issue. I may mention when we get to the Gemara, probably not today, how Tosis brings a riot, and how Tosis knows that. But in the meantime, assume for the moment that you don't put anything on it, you just roast it as is. Okay, so the rotev is the sauce, is the juice of the Pesach itself. Okay. So what do you have to do? Hitalas makomo. And notice that here, the Mishnah is going to use three different verbs. Now, for halachis, the first two are the significant ones. One of them is yitalas makomo, and the other one is yiklofes makomo. And we have two different shiurim in halacha. the kedei klipa is really scraping, whereas yitol actually requires taking something of a layer, a real layer. I mean, klipa is scraping off the outer layer. That's not very much. Kedei nitila, as it's called, is ka'ovei etzpa. Yeah, that's far more significant amount. And we've seen it before. Okay, so now what's next? So what's going on here? So let's say somehow some of it, you have flour nearby, and some of the juice splatters onto the flour. So the Mishnah says, Yikmots es makomo, which is probably like kedei netila by flour.
Where?
Why is it usser? Okay, but is the soul less hot or cold? The Gemara is going to talk about that issue, but already the question really is, what about if is the rotav cooked or not cooked? What's that? I would assume for the moment, maybe this might be wrong, the rotav maybe is cooked. What's that?
Rotav that you put on something, you can eat it already.
No, let's say the rotav that drips off already, would you look at this rotav, would you say the gravy that comes dripping off, is that edible? I mean, we may not eat gravy alone, but would you say that's fully cooked? Would the germs be dead in it, you know, or mostly dead in it? So the assumption I would have made is yes, but maybe not. Now, at the early stages of cooking, it's not true, right? I mean, because it's not whole and you're not chewing it, it may not taste raw, but it might not have cooked long enough to be called mavushal, really. So in terms of the Mishnah, you have to ask, is the concern that this rotev is Karban Pesach, which is being cooked somehow by the Soles, or is there a different concern in play? Namely, if the rotev were not fully cooked yet, what would it then be? Let's say the Soles were not cooking it, but the rotev weren't fully cooked, what would it then be? Oh, so al tochlu mimenu na. Right, what does na mean?
Raw.
Not entirely clear, but it appears to mean raw. Right, there's a famous Ibn Ezra there. Even the famous Rashi. Forget Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra wasn't so firm, but Rashi was firm. And he says that there's an Arabic word. Rashi didn't know Arabic, but he obviously knew it probably from whichever Menachem Adunash, the one who believed that you could use Arabic. One of them did. One of them was very opposed to it. I forget which was which. So Rashi quotes it. Ibn Ezra quotes a very clever pshat. In other words, the pshat understand. I mean, it's not the pshat, but does understand that it means raw. It means not cooked. How so? Because what does the word not always mean in biblical Hebrew or normally?
Now.
It means now. Targum Chalon says Ka'an. So Al Tochlum and others don't eat it as it is now. And how was it now? It was still baing, right? It was still walking around alive at the time Moshe Rabbeinu was speaking to them. So it was raw at the time. So therefore, don't eat it as if it is now. Okay, that's not pshat, even though it's very clever. But he thinks, like Rashi, that it's an Arabic word which means not fully cooked or something like that. So it could be that the Isser and the concern of Kemitza here isn't about Bishul, it isn't about being, you know, Bashel Mavushal as opposed to being Tzliyesh. It could be that it's a concern of Na. Right? That's not clear from the Mishnah. Alright, and then the rest of the Mishnah read quickly. Okay. So this may not be an issue. It's not an issue of Bashem v'shal b'mayim. It's just an issue of whether or not it's asur lizarim. Okay, and finally. Which is an interesting comment because I thought you can be Mocher Masa Sheni anytime. Unless the Mishnah holds that Master Sheni is Mamon Hedyo. But if you hold Master Sheni as Mamon Gavo, you're never allowed to sell it. You're only allowed to be Podet. Okay? Fine. So now begin the Gemara. Itmar. Okay, now there is a brisa that addresses this issue. Where is the brisa? The Tosefta Chulin in the 8th parak. Where is it cited in the Gemara? Later down on the Amud. It would appear that Rav was not aware of this brisa. Maybe Shmuel wasn't either. And it almost seems like the beginning of the sugya just ignores it as well. That's a general question. Whenever you have, the Gemara has a whole shock of Atari, it's going to try to bring a raya, I think, from all three clauses in our Mishnah. And then all of a sudden it's going to say, Tanya Kavase de Shmuel. Even if you never got so far, if you just saw on top, Rashi writes, not a common comment that Rashi would make. Notice that Rashi writes on Shmuel Amar Tata Gavar, he says that even though normally Hilchasa Karabi Surei, here we pass something like Shmuel because you have two brises below that follow Shmuel. Okay, so what is the machlokas? So I'm going to start out with the following presupposition. I think this will hold true. I'm not 100% sure myself. We're dealing with a solid and a liquid. We are not dealing necessarily, maybe you could be dealing with solid and solid, but I don't think so. You're dealing with a solid and a liquid, one which falls into the other or one which falls on the other. And the question is, do we assume that Tom will transfer completely between the two? So if they're both hot, Rav and Shmuel agree that one will completely favor the other, and therefore, regardless of whether the one that fell or the one that into which it fell is Shel Isser, it's going to be Isser. And if they're both Tzonein, it doesn't matter which is on top, which is on the bottom. But if you have Cham L'toch Tzonein or Tzonein L'toch Cham, meaning that you have a hot piece of meat and it falls into cold liquid, or you have a cold piece of meat that falls into hot liquid, or you have hot liquid that falls on a cold piece of meat, or cold liquid that falls on a hot piece of meat, so then what would the din there be? So the laws of rabbinic thermodynamics go as follows. Rav Amar Ila Gavar, Shmuel Amar Tata Gavar. Rav says that the upper one gets the upper hand, and if it's hot, it apparently heats up the lower one enough to now have hot and hot, and therefore it would aser, regardless of which one was the iser and which one was the heter, the upper source of heat would make it a tarobis of cham and cham, and it would all be aser.
So if it's liquid, is the solid falling into the top or the bottom? If it's one solid and liquid, is the thing falling in on top or the bottom?
For now, until proven otherwise, let's assume it makes no difference. The thing that falls from on top, that falls in first, that makes first contact coming from above. Let's assume for the moment that it's always the upper thing falling. That's the ilah. It doesn't matter. The fact that it's eventually going to be surrounded doesn't matter. Just as when the liquid comes from on top, right, the fact that they know it's going to settle doesn't mean anything. The fact that it's going to settle doesn't make it tata. Now, it happens to be the Gemara's examples from our Mishnah are a case where the liquid is not going to get below the solid, right? If it drips onto the cheres, it's always on top of the cheres. But I'm not sure that matters. I think it's the initial point of contact that matters. Okay, and Shmuel says, Tata Gavar. Shmuel says that whatever is below determines whether it's hot or cold, and therefore if the bottom part is cold, then it's going to be like tzonin l'toch tzonin. If the bottom part is hot, it's going to be like cham l'toch cham. Now, I'm of course not telling you a full story because there is a qualification. What's the qualification? Only if you read the... Did you get to the bottom? Oh, you didn't get that far. Okay, so I'm not going to tell you the qualification yet because now you read this Gemara with a tabula rasa, so you know that what's the din according to Shmuel? When an Isser cham falls into an Isser tzonin, what's the din? How much is Asr? Nothing. if an Isser Sonin falls on Tochen Isser Ham, it's all Asser. Well, the Isser was Asser already, and it's all Asser. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara now. Jason.
Is this happening in the oven?
Is it happening in the oven? No, we're not in Karban Pesach right now. It's happening in the middle of your kitchen. You have a pot.
Okay, okay.
No, it's important. The Gemara quotes the Jason is asking a question that's more fundamental to all of the Bavli. There are a lot of times when you learn Gemara where the Gemara starts discussing a very interesting machlokas, and you're so, and as I like to say, because Talmidei HaBeis Medrash never seem to realize that the Gemara is in fact the Perush on the Mishnah, as tautological and obvious that fact is, it's usually lost upon us. Therefore, when you often read a Gemara and they start to quote a Meimra, you rarely stop on your own to ask yourself the question, why are they discussing this? But if you were an ordinary person, a non-denizen of the Beis Medrash, who had no experience, and you learn this Mishnah, and you start to read this Machlokas, you start to scratch your head and say, what is going on here? Could these people not put a sentence together with a subject and a predicate that actually had something to do with one another? Okay? But there's a reason for it. Obviously, why does the Gemara often quote these seemingly random debates among Amoraim on a Mishnah like this, even though it not doesn't seem to be connected? The answer is because in every case, the Gemara is going to attempt to bring a raya, even if it's not obvious to you, from the Mishnah to this particular debate among the Amoraim, and that's what's going to happen here. Now, here, the connection is
could work the other way around. It could be that there's a raya in the discussion which will apply to understanding the Mishnah.
I guess that's possible, but this is very common, what you're going to see here. So now, what does the Gemara say? Tanan.
Not so near to all our parents, but how they're allowed to call the Chikol. The Chikol, the Chikol.
Well, that's a big Kasal Kedaitach, but the assumption is the Cheres is coal. So what happens? The hot rotev or shuman falls on the cheres and bounces back. And the assumption is the cheres is tata'a, the rotev is ilah. Now, what must be happening? So the Gemara explains. Bishlama l'rav. The azal rotev. The rotev goes mirateach le cheres. Okay. Now, one must admit that the connection of this Mishnah to the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel was not obvious, except for that you're talking about Isurim, that somehow. So the suggestion is for Rav, it makes sense, because Rav holds that the upper source contributes the thermodynamic heft, and therefore, when the hot rotev falls on the cheres below it, the cold cheres, you have a heat transfer to the cheres that now transfers some of it back to the rotev, which means the rotev is now being cooked partially by the cheres, and now when it does a Olympic-sized jump back to the Pesach, it now is the Pesach, that part of the Pesach, the rotev, and that part of the Pesach is tzli cheres, not tzli esh. But if you say like Shmuel... Why should you have to be notel makomo? If after all, the only basis on which, in other words, if this rotev, we're not talking about scraping off the oven, the rotev hops back to the Karban Pesach, what's your concern? If the rotev is raw, that's not a problem because it's going to continue to cook on the Karban Pesach. If the concern is that the rotev is not tzliyesh, of course it's tzliyesh. The cheres didn't heat it at all, the cheres cooled it. The only thing that was so lit was the esh. It might have been nitzla in two stages, but it's still going to be tzliyesh. So what's the answer? Okay. Now this is again it's a point that's not made, but because we're reading Gemara, I think it's important to make it. When the Gemara cites a kida'amar of X, it means that the answer was given in another context. We're going to apply it here. Where is the other context? Almost inevitably, later in the same sugya. It's going to be the next kasha. But when you first read it, Kida Omar, Rabbi Yirmi, Omar Shmuel, Besoles Rotachas, so you read the Mishnah, so you have a sense, you could guess what's coming, but So the Gemara is taking an answer that one of the Amorim gave on a different kasha, and it's applying it to this kasha. Continue.
Why did that one come first? Second?
Excellent question, and the answer to the question would be... What's the answer to the question? It's an excellent question. You're the only one who can answer it because you're the only one who might have been able to think about it before. Excellent comment.
Because you're saying sogya locally or general? The you wouldn't get to the second question if you started with the first question.
No. Sequence. Order of the Mishnah. The first case was not that Meirot Valacheres. The second one is not that Meirot Valacheres. The third raya the Gemara is going to attempt to bring is Sacho B'Shem and Shotruma. Just following the sequence of the Mishnah.
Why did he say Cheres Rotea and then
Sola
for that?
So, that's the next excellent question. So, if you look at the second thing, apparently the second question was probably asked earlier than the first question. And now, and I think the Balei Tosfos, I don't know, do they deal with this? They ask the Kasha why they don't ask them the first part of the Mishnah, but the assumption is that apparently they weren't as bothered by the question. The answer was more obvious when it came to the first part of the Mishnah and the second, but the Gemara is choosing to round out the discussion. From the fact that Rabbi Yirmiyah responds to that question indicates that the earlier, somebody asked that question earlier. Right? In other words, both it happens to be that both of them are anonymous questions. Both start with Dan. But you can assume that Rabbi Yirmiyah is responding to the second, so that was an earlier Amoreya question, whereas the first one was the stem of the Gemara asking. Sort of to round out the sugya. Now you want to explain why were they not bothered by the first question, not bothered by the second question. So the answer I think is I'll give you a pashut answer, which I think is obvious, but maybe it's not correct. Which is, of course, what cheres do you have lying around here? Obviously, the cheres of the oven. If you're cooking the Pesach, the oven's hot too. In other words, the only way you could have cheres to anus is at the very early stages. But my presumption is that you fire the oven first, then you put the carbon Pesach in. In fact, I mean, I'm sure that's how you always baked, and you can see that even. You can see that probably even from. Well, actually, you can't prove that. They could be simultaneous. Where do you know, by the way, about. Does anybody know anything about the cooking? I guess you wouldn't have learned it. About the cooking of the Karban Pesach. There's an area of halacha where it's related to, which is very much l'maisa b'zman hazeh, which the Karban Pesach is invoked as an exception to the rule. And that is on Shabbos, the dinim of shehiya, of being cooked k'macho ben drusai before we put it in, don't apply. Why? Because we assume that b'nei chabura is rizenheim, like kohanim is rizenheim. It's the last mishnah in the first parak in Shabbos. But the assumption would be that the cheres, of course the cheres is hot, but the solas was not as obvious, because what solas are you talking about? Presumably you're talking about some solas which was lying around that I don't know what you were going to do with, but presumably you don't have hot solas, you know, next to the... Why would you be heating the solas next to the carbon Pesach that you're baking? Or why would you have solas lying around? Thank you! You're not in the mikdash anymore. You're not bringing a carbon mincha, right? It's Laila. Once you're roasting... you could roast... if it's normally they probably roast it at night, But on Shabbos, on Erev Shabbos, they would roast it during the day. And you're not roasting in the mikdash, you're roasting outside. The solas you're dealing with is to bake your matzahs, right? Some of you know does anybody know anybody crazy who actually, does anybody bake matzahs Motzei Shabbos when Pesach comes out on Sunday? Now, those who have the chumrah to bake, the Mechaber mentions it. I mean, it's a chumrah, but it's a chumrah, even the Mechaber almost mentions it as a din, to bake matzahs on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, right? So does anybody actually know anybody who does it Lel Motzei Shabbos? Because then, I don't know. Anyway, so that's what you have solas sending around. So it's a good question, but I suspect that it's ordered this way because of the sequence. The reason why Rav Yirmiyah didn't respond to a question on the first part is because the question wasn't initially asked in the first part, maybe because they thought the answer was obvious. Okay. So now, Rav Yirmiyah, the next question, Tanan, just read this and we'll stop with this. Tanan, Natah. I may have mispronounced this word. It's probably Martecha. It's probably a hifil, that's my guess, but I'm not sure. There is an expression, the Hadar Hudrani. I mean, the way you almost translate that is that it gets around. That's the way Rashi translates it. Lashon Schar Scharle. You know, anyway, and I'm not sure exactly what this phrase means, but it means it gets the soul less hot, and then the Hadra Soles, it reheats the Rotev, and this is not dripping back on the Pesach, but it means that you can't eat that Rotev. Why can't you eat the Rotev? Because it's not, the Rotev is part of the Pesach, and that's Sli Sli Kamach, Sli Soles, not Sli Ish. Kavetavi Rotev Machmas Chami Musa the Soles Rachman Amar Sli. Hello, Shmuel. Okay, and there's a machlokus when the Rashi takes out that line next there. Tiski lei. No. I realize that's an easy. That's like an Arav Chama. It's biyitol es makomo, right? That's an easy one. That's really easy to miss. So tiski lei biyitol es makomo. Okay, we may or may not talk about that. All right. So Amar Virmi, Amar Shmuel. Right, so here, by the way, you can see that Shmuel commented about the Mishnah. Now, I would make one note here, and let's see how many you can really turn fast on this one. You have to have experience with this. Notice, I didn't realize this earlier, the Gemara didn't quote this. Whose response was this? Shmuel. What might one, if one were really going out on a very narrow limb and say, and I haven't looked at to see if there's any Yushalmi parallel to this, so I'm flying blind here, but just as a methodological approach, what might one say about Shmuel's statement on top of the Amud? It could be an inference from this statement. In other words, now again, you haven't explained where Rav is coming from, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit at the beginning tomorrow, but often what you may have is, in other words, as a general rule, when the Gemara quotes an Amara saying something, and he uses the word Amar, it doesn't always mean the Amara said that. How do I know that? Even if I had no academic training whatsoever.
Someone else, it's quoted in the name of somebody else elsewhere.
No, they could have both said it, maybe. Or maybe there's a missing name in the chain.
Because often the Gemara will tell you
because
that.
In about 20 places in the Shas, you'll have the following assertion made. Had the Raploni la beferish itmar, el mechlala itmar. And sometimes, in other words, it was not stated explicitly, it was an inference. What was first presented to the Gemara as Amar of X is then said to be Mechlala, and sometimes the Gemara says the inference is wrong. And sometimes the Gemara says, no, the Gemara sometimes will say, V'i Mechlala Mai. And you know, first they'll tell you, what was the inference that was made? It was either made from another statement, it was made from a Maisa, that someone concludes that Rav said, Rav, in other words, Amar Rav doesn't mean Rav said, it means Rav held. And then sometimes the Gemara will say, the inference is wrong. The inference is wrong. Sometimes it accepts it, sometimes it doesn't. If you have a particular obsession with this, I wrote a paper when I was in graduate school on this, so I have a particular affinity for this particular ha'ara. So if you're really interested, I can dig it out. And if anybody's interested, I don't think it's that interesting, but I think I study the usage of the Farish Itmar. That's the things that you do when you have to write papers for graduate courses. Okay. You know, when it's not your first thing you're doing. Well, that was, I think, before I was actually really doing rabbinics as my interest. I was still doing Septuagint, so I just have to write a paper for a course. Okay. Anyway, nothing wrong with it.
Sure.
So anyway, but it could very well be. It could very well be that Shmuel's statement here, this ukimta, and the Shmuel's statement doesn't have to be a response to the kasha. Shmuel's statement could be a comment on the Mishnah. Shmuel could say that hachav amayaskin and besolas. No, Shmuel could say besolas rotachas askinan or masnisan besolas rotachas. And the Gemara could then take that statement and understand why did Shmuel have to say that it was soles rotachas? Because if the soles weren't hot to start with, Shmuel's assumption was that the soles wouldn't have been asur and that the rotev would not have asur the soles. And that would only make sense if Shmuel assumes that the soles has to be heating the rotev that falls on it. And that only makes sense if you assume that tata gavar, and therefore if the soles were cold, then it would not end up asuring the rotev because the rotev would only be hot machmas the rotev. It might warm the solus, but that's okay. It might warm the solus a little bit, but that would not make it. You wouldn't have this dual process. Okay. So anyway, so for tomorrow we'll pick up where we left off there. I hadn't really thought about this case about the Shmuel issue. Where are you going to look to find this, to find out more about this? You're going to look in the Yifei Naim, who will tell you, and you could look straight in the Yushalmi to see if the Yushalmi has any statements of Shmuel or Rav here on this topic. We would still have to explain, by the way, where Rav came from. The Gemara is not going to make it up. You could disagree with the Gemara's inference, but the Gemara is not going to make it up out of thin air. Okay, good.